witch Ibaba controls you by stealing your name. If you completely forget it, you'll never find your way home.
Your name belongs to me now.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity. Hey, baddies! Welcome back to Next Door Villain Podcast. We are so excited that you are here on this ride with us through this magical land of spirits and hopes and dreams and love. All love today.
Yeah, because we are, of course, talking about the much beloved film, Spirited Away.
Spirited Away. And I am so glad that you are able to experience this amazing film.
Yeah, this is a film that so many people have told me that I needed to watch. And I have so many friends who love this film. And really all the films out of the studio that made it, Ghibli, Studio Ghibli. And so I finally watched this a couple weeks ago for the first time, rented it. And it was, I mean, truly a magical delight. This is like a film that takes place in a whole nother world and is told in a way, in a storytelling way that's different than I think a lot of Western stories are told. Western as in like the United States, not as in...
There are other Western countries, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are other Western countries, but I just meant as opposed to like country Westerns.
Oh, right.
You know, for those people in the U.S. who think of ourselves as the center of the universe.
True. Yeah. There's no yeehaw in this film.
But there is a lot of other stuff in this film. There's so many different characters and so many different symbols. Like, this is just a film that's like jam-packed with myths and symbolism and metaphor. There's just like so much to unpack, and we're not even really going to be able to touch on much of it because we're going to be so focused on the villains of this story, primarily Ibaba. And then of course we also just felt like we had to talk about No Face as well.
Yeah.
Because he, she, they, I'm gonna say they for No Face.
Yeah. I mean, all of the internet sites seem to give him he, him pronouns. But at the same time, who really knows? Like, if I go on like the Wikipedia page or read stuff about Spirited Away, they're always like, he is No Face. So, but I don't know. No Face is a being. Yeah. So
I'm gonna say they, because
okay,
I don't think there's any like strong indicators of any particular gender. And I don't think that he needs that. I don't think that they need to be gendered.
Yeah, that's true. And we are doing something kind of unique for this episode in that we're covering two villains, because No Face was a villain for maybe 10-ish minutes of the film, but still somewhat villainous. And Ibaba. So we're going to be talking about both of them, which I am excited about. So I think to get started, to kind of jog our memories, we're going to level up. We're going to make our 30-second intro challenge even harder, because we're going to talk about both characters within 30 seconds. I'm so sorry, listeners, baddies.
Two villains, but... 30 seconds.
Oh, gosh. It's okay. I'll probably win again.
Probably.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right. Ibaba is this witch who rules over a bathhouse, and she's got these magical abilities. So many magical abilities, but her most important one is perhaps that she can take people's names from them and basically hold that over them so that they have to work for her. And then there's this other character in this film called No Face, and he really... wants people to love him, and so he gives them lots of gold so that they'll like love him and care for him, even though that's not the best way to get love.
Sorry, that's not the best way to get love. Tell me more.
I will tell you
how do more. I get love. How do I get love? Tell me.
All right, 30 seconds is not a lot of time. Three, two, one, go.
Okay, so Yubaba owns the bathhouse, and she can take names, and she keeps Chihiro's parents as pigs, but she also sticks to deals pretty well, and she takes Chihiro's names, makes it sen, also makes Haku do her dirty work. And so No Face is like this being who's all dressed in black, and I like to dress up as No Face for Halloween, and they sneak into the bathhouse, and they're like, ooh, I have some gold, and then they are eating it all up, and they get really insane, and...
Time's up. This is a tough one. I think we should, like, maybe fill in a little details that we missed. For example, that there are spirits in a spirit world. I feel like that's important.
Yes, that is important, and I will talk a bit more about this, too, when I get into more elements of Shintoism, but they are spirit or kami, and spirit is just... like the translation that's most closely related to kami, but they can take many different forms. Like they could be spirits that inhabit living things or elements of a landscape or forces of nature or beings that were once alive. You know, that's very fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come to the bathhouse to get cleansed. And I'll talk a bit more about that later, but Yubaba runs the bathhouse. She does a lot of like not so great things. She keeps Chihiro's parents as pigs, even though she definitely has the power to bring them back into human form because she thinks they were being pretty naughty by eating all of their food. She has a lot of control over Haku, who does quote-unquote dirty work for her. She's really obsessed with her baby, which actually is kind of a good thing. And she has a twin sister who seems a little bit more pleasant than Yubaba. And she takes people's names and they kind of forget their identities because she took their identity, essentially.
Yeah. And she's really the primary villain of this movie. And the taking of the name things, like, to me, that's one of the, like, toughest parts of the movie. And one of the most, probably the most villainous thing she does is take someone's identity, because self-identity is so important to a person and their sense of being. And to take that away is so villainous, so dark. No Face is not a primary villain, or, you know, it's sometimes hard to even call him a villain. I made this choice and now I'm messing up, but I'm doing my best.
It's okay. Me too.
So they are this thing, creature, spirit that just is like in the background and it's kind of creepy looking. But Chihiro sees them as sad and as like maybe desiring something, and sees them like stuck outside the bathhouse and lets them into the bathhouse. And then once they're inside, they learn that people love money. And so they give money to all the people in order to get all this praise and adoration.
And all the beings, because there are other like... beings that like work in the bathhouse, and they're like, give me gold, I'll give you anything.
Yeah, and basically turns into this like gluttonous giant like monster bead who's just like giving gold to everyone so that they'll like get attention and love. And it's really kind of sad, but that's kind of the villainous part of them. But ultimately that character then learns that's not the best way to get love and adoration, and ultimately that's because of Chihiro. But we'll get into more of that later. I think it would behoove us for you, Tiana, to kind of talk a little bit contextually about what this film means from a cultural level. And I'm sure you'll preface this yourself a little bit, but we are not of Asian descent, or we did not grow up in Asia or Japan specifically, so we're not immediately familiar with this kind of stuff in the way that someone native to those areas would be. So we're certainly not trying to kind of to co-opt that, but simply to learn a little bit about that
tradition, yeah, way of life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Tiana, I'm going to let you talk about that a little bit more, because you do have some knowledge and have studied some of this a little bit. And so I think it's really probably most appropriate for you to explain it.
So kind of like what Joe said, as a white American woman, I am kind of getting my information from academics and Japanese scholars in order to inform me about what Shintoism is. because I don't want to claim that I know everything about Shintoism, and I'm kind of deferring to real experts and people who are from Japan. So the article that I'm referring to a lot throughout this is Shinto Perspectives in Miyazaki's Anime Film Spirited Away from the Journal of Religion and Film by Tetsuya Nishimura and James Boyd. So you can find that online if you're interested, because I definitely won't have time to talk about everything related to Shintoism and all the Shinto elements in this film. This episode would be like 5 hours if I did that. But I think just as like a general overview, there are elements of Shintoism in Spirited Away, and we really can't ignore that. And it's an aspect of Japanese life, and it's ingrained in Japanese culture. It's not necessarily a religion, but it emphasizes devotion to spiritual beings or kami. And as I said earlier, they can inhabit living things or be different types of kami. The definition of that is really fluid. And these kami are spirits that are concerned with human beings. They appreciate interest in them and want humans to be happy. And if the kami are treated properly, they will intervene in people's lives to bring benefits like health, business, success, good exam results, etc. And so there's a lot of Shinto shrines in Japan that people can go to do ritual. I think this next part is the most important part, because it has a lot of this in Spirited Away. Purification in Shintoism is really important. So basically, and this is from the article, we need to act in such ways that we can purify ourselves or wipe away pollution. And this means both to literally clean ourselves, like wash away the dirt, as well as cleanse our attitudes and cultivate a sound, pure, bright heart and mind, and act with genuine sincerity toward others and the world. Basically, you need to cleanse yourself so that you're a decent person towards those around you and participate genuinely in the world. And people can purify through ritual, especially at shrines. And so, Yubaba, right? She owns a bathhouse. So Miyazaki got his inspiration from the solstice rituals, where people would call forth the kami or spirits and invite them to bathe in their baths. So this is what inspired the bathhouse. And so this is also part of the article. Being true to the Shinto insight that all phenomena often become polluted and are in need of cleansing and purification in order to manifest their vitality, Miyazaki has this strange array of creatures come to the bathhouse to be restored to their original freshness. And I should have mentioned this earlier, Miyazaki is the writer and creator of Spirited Away and many other amazing films. So what I gathered, you know, when thinking more about Yubaba and who she is, she's, you know, this being lady who runs a bathhouse, and she's very assertive and she is very controlling of employees to manage a massive bathhouse. And it seems that she needs to pursue the endeavor of cleansing spirits and helping spirits be their true selves in nature. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Like, this is Yubaba's goal and motivation. You can't get in the way of that. Yubaba literally means hot water and old woman. So she's so fitting for her role. So, you know, I can see that she is so passionate. She has this pressure where she's actually trying to make the world a better place by cleansing kami or spirits mm-hmm. in her bathhouse. And I think she knows that she has a really big job to do. And is the only way to do that by controlling employees? I don't know.
Yeah.
but she could think that. Yeah. Yeah.
So correct me if I'm wrong about this. But so I did a little reading on Shintoism as well. And Miyazaki himself, I think he cares about, and Shintoism kind of cares about nature and the environment and kind of living in harmony. And this belief that humans, like especially modern people, are really kind of pollutants to the environment and just like destroying the environment in a lot of ways. We see that over and over again in this film and in other Miyazaki films as well. So I'm thinking about in the bathhouse, particularly the river spirit that comes in, that's yes. like that great big dirty thing that nobody wants to clean. And then Chihiro ends up saving the day basically by cleaning it off, is that it was covered in dirt and grime and stuff and then trash from people. Yeah. And so like we think of Yubaba as this like terrible person, and she hates humans, and so does like so many people, so many spirits in this world. And you can kind of maybe start to see why and why they think that humans smell bad when you think about that river spirit who came in just destroyed by trash. And so I mean, back to your point that she has a big job here and a difficult job is basically, you know, purifying these spirits from the pollution of humans.
For sure. Yeah, it's a big job. And I don't know, I can kind of get why she's kind of a no-nonsense woman. And I love that scene where Sen / Chihiro helps clean the river spirit. And both she and Yubaba work together to clean the spirit. And I love that scene because Yubaba seems like such an amazing character in that moment, because you can tell that she really appreciates hard work, and you can tell that she works really hard and she works as hard as she can in order to complete her goal. And when you help accomplish her goal, she is appreciative. Mm-hmm. She was super nice to Sen after she helped clean the river spirit. And so I love that scene so much because Yubaba almost seems like a helper in that moment.
Yeah, as like strict and greedy as she is, yeah, she does seem to respond well to people when they do good jobs. Like there's definitely a caring and appreciative side of her.
For sure. Yeah, especially with her baby.
Yeah. If you don't remember, she has this massive baby.
Which I'm like, how? It's a spirit world, so like, I shouldn't be like, how do you have that big of a baby? But yeah, every time I see that baby, I'm like, I don't think I would be able to take care of that big of a baby.
Yeah. Is there, however, and I know we're trying to empathize with her, but just thinking about the symbolism of the massive baby, is there perhaps a commentary on the overcaring or overly like helicopter parenting, maybe putting too much into this child? I don't know. I'm just like, I'm just popping this out of my head right now. It's not something I thought of before, but I don't know. Maybe there's something there.
It was also kind of relatable because I was just telling one of my friends, she recently had a baby, and I was like, I think I am at very high risk of being a helicopter parent, but I am glad that I recognize that about myself, so that maybe after I have a kid, I will like catch that. Anywho, I could be kind of like Yubaba.
If anything, it like at least shows her capacity to love. And if she has such a great capacity to love, I think you have to call into question, why is she so strict and difficult at other times? Because, you know, if you have all this love in you and you're clearly not inherently bad, which I think I would argue that nobody is, why are you acting poorly at certain times or being villainous at certain times then?
That is a great segue, actually.
Oh, good.
Another thing that I've learned from my research on Shintoism is that Shintoism teaches us there is no absolute right or wrong. Mm-hmm. There's kind of a moral ambivalence. And so it seems purposeful that Yubaba and No Face kind of are in this moral ambivalence area. As you said, Yubaba is so capable of love and devotion, but she can be a bit of a brat sometimes. Mm-hmm. So in this article, they say, in other words, from a Shinto perspective, Yubaba and Zeniba, and so Zeniba is the twin who is more pleasant than Yubaba, does not seem as quote-unquote evil as Yubaba. They don't represent fixed opposites in good versus evil, like you might find in films such as Lord of the Rings. Rather, these two ladies and No Face reflect a Shinto ethical outlook that views events in one's life as either reducing or polluting or promoting or purifying one's ability to participate fully in the life energy that permeates all of great nature. Yubaba seems to pollute in some ways. Quote unquote pollute. You know, she keeps parents as pigs, do dirty work, you know, get dirty work, get it? but she's vital to show that there are actions and events that can impact one's ability to have a sincere heart. So she's kind of there in the film in order to challenge Chihiro and to show that, you know, someone else's actions can sometimes stump you from being able to live with sincerity. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of there for that reason. to give challenge like so many other villains.
Yeah.
But she's ambivalent. She's not like evil, you know, like we can't say that she's entirely evil.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's something that Western culture struggles with in particular. And I'm saying this obviously as someone who is does not know, you know, that much about Shintoism or other non-Western cultures. But I do get the sense that, like, at least in America, there's this strong ideal of right versus wrong. And you're on you're on the good side or you're on the bad side. You know, Star Wars, you're like light side or you're dark side. But you know, the reality is, and what we talk about on this podcast is that the like constantly is that that's not true generally. Rarely is it true. Yeah, there is good and bad in everybody. And that's, I think that's one of the things I really love about this Shintoism is that it teaches that idea.
For sure. And even when I said the sentence, Yubaba is capable of love and devotion, but can be a bit of a brat, I immediately thought of myself. Like, I feel that I'm capable of giving so much and being a good person, but there are random moments, even just throughout the day, where I could be incredibly selfish, or I might say something that's mean, or, you know, it's, yeah, like you said, moral ambivalence. So,
yeah. Or it's like that thing where, which I feel like white men are like particularly bad at, where they, where you can't take criticism for something you like. So like, it's okay to both love something and be critical of it. And our American culture, I think, has a has a really hard, a really a big problem with that. And I think it causes a lot of strife with a lot of people because they're not able to be critical. So they don't understand that, like, just because someone else is saying something bad about the thing that you care about doesn't mean that that thing is inherently bad or that you're inherently bad for liking it. It's just, it's okay to recognize that both of those things can exist within the same thing.
Yeah, I can see that. Another comment that I wrote down too, has Yubaba remembered to cleanse herself? Because, you know, the kami, they come in there to cleanse themselves and be a part of a more purified world. And I was like, has Yubaba taken advantage of her own baths? maybe she should.
I was thinking a lot about Yubaba and her role as leader of the bathhouse. I kind of did maybe a little more literal reading of her situation, but I really felt like I empathized with her greatly because, so I'm going to kind of take a meandering route, but I'm going to come back to this idea. But I'm a twin and she is also a twin. One of the things about being a twin is that you are both often kind of lumped together. When I was growing up, there were many times where I had to wear the same outfits as my brother when I was younger, you know, or the same Halloween costume. And all the time, people just thought of us as the same person. In elementary school, we always had to be in the same classes together. And so,
are you identical?
No, I'm not an identical twin. But regardless, we were still always lumped together. I can think of this one time in particular that was really annoying. It's kind of stupid, but my brother had been friends with this kid, and then they were no longer friends, and then I became friends with that same kid, and then that kid invited me to his birthday party, but not my brother, and I wasn't allowed to go because my brother wasn't invited, which was really sucked. But I mean, the point that I'm getting at is that because I was a twin and because I was being lumped together with someone, I felt like I was not being seen as an individual or recognized as an individual. And I think the way that I reacted to that was that I went out and started like overachieving in a lot of ways. You know, I joined like student government and I played multiple sports in high school and I was in AP classes. And I think I kind of like internalized this idea that like, if I could go out and be successful and produce something, then I could be seen and recognized as my own person. Because I'm doing something and producing something that my brother was not, and so I could be seen as an individual. So I'm wrapping this back around to Yubaba, and obviously this is speculation, but I was constantly wondering, like, she wears like all this big jewelry and she does her makeup up and her hair is really nice. And she's obviously a really successful leader who lives in this expensive, probably apartment above the bathhouse that she runs with tons of employees. And I just have to wonder, does she also feel driven by the need to stand out from her identical twin? And does she feel like this is the way that she can accomplish that, by being successful, by being showy, by, you know, just accomplishment? I don't know. I mean, that's...
I think that could be the case. The thing that comes to mind is the fact that she had Haku steal something from Zeniba.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel like that further shows that that could be a real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because she seems to be in some kind of conflict with her sister anyway. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And her sister, I mean, is quite the opposite as well. Like, she's lives in a little hut out in the countryside, basically.
Yeah.
And seems quite content with that life. And I think that, like, that would be very frustrating if I was Yubaba, to be like seeing my identical twin sister just like chilling and like being fine with that while I'm like working so hard to try to get people to see me and really appreciate me. I guess the other reason I was thinking about that, and I know I'm kind of rambling here a little bit, but back to the name stealing thing, taking someone's name is taking their identity. And I wonder if part of that is kind of this jealousy of people for having their own identities, and she's like taking them so that they can feel what she feels in a way, which is that she doesn't have her own individual identity. I don't know that there's necessarily evidence to back this up in the film, but it's a way that I just like latched on to empathizing with her and trying to understand her situation.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I couldn't think of any justification. I couldn't justify the name taking.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of stumped by that. So I'm glad that you at least kind of thought about that, even though we really don't know for sure.
Yeah. To be clear, I'm not justifying it. I think it was
right.
a net bad thing for people. Just that it might be coming from a place of loneliness and sadness rather than a place of maliciousness, potentially.
Yeah. Speaking of loneliness, I think we should move on to talking about No Face a little bit more too.
You wanna dive in first?
Sure. One thing that I just wanted to mention, it's almost as if because No Face was exposed to the greed of others and exposed to the beings who wanted gold, they kind of ate up or soaked in the qualities of others and began acting like them, and then became greedy and demanding. But then after spending time with Chihiro, they become more pleasant and they become more sincere, and they seem to have an open heart because they've spent time with Chihiro, who has an open heart and who has to practice opening her heart up more.
Yes. So I think that you can read that two ways, or both ways at once. Doesn't have to be either or. The first one is that No Face just wants to fit in, and they are mirroring what they see from other people, which is this kind of like gluttony and greed and desire for money. The other way you can read it, and the way that I read it, was that No Face was this kind of sad, lonely thing that was given a chance at love, and then learned that people really like gold, and he gave people gold, and he got and they got this like serotonin release. It like felt so good that when they gave people the gold, they like loved and adored them and responded to them and gave them attention. And so they just kept giving gold to people to continually get that and got addicted to it because that was the way that they knew, and the only way that they knew to get people to care about them, because before they had just been stuck outside in the cold and no one paid attention to them.
Yeah.
Of course, then Chihiro comes along and doesn't want the gold. And they kind of were like, what's the deal? I thought this was how people love you and care about you. And then, you know, basically learns from Chihiro that there's maybe like there's a higher level of love. And that's having a like reciprocal relationship with someone else. And that's when No Face really kind of abandons this whole greedy villain vibe that they've got going on, and joins up with Chihiro, and then ultimately ends up living with Zeniba in the end and being a companion to her.
Yeah, and No Face is kind of able to open up their heart by being near others that care about them. Also by giving back. Like, No Face gave back to Zeniba by pooling or like spinning thread.
Yeah.
So like you said, it was reciprocal. It wasn't just, and it was genuine reciprocity.
Mm-hmm. Reciprocity.
It was genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was genuine reciprocity. It wasn't like, here's gold, please love me. Mm-hmm. It was, oh, let me help you and then you'll help me.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. I very much see No Face and Yubaba as very similar beings, both very greedy at points in the film, but both motivated by a desire to be either seen or heard or loved or respected or whatever. And I think it's helpful sometimes to think of greed in that way when you're approaching people in your everyday life that you see who are greedy. They might be greedy because they're missing something, and this is how they get that thing that they're missing.
Yeah, I think people love No Face, not only because No Face looks really cute, but also because I think everyone's been in that place where they've felt lonely and kind of begged for love, tried several different ways to get that love, kind of failed at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you want to say anything else about No Face?
No, I think that was, that pretty much covers kind of the whole No Face deal for me.
I do have a question.
Oh, great.
When was a specific time when you've been like No Face? Well, I guess it's up to you if you want to be specific or not.
Yeah, like in what manner? Like,
you get to choose.
Oh, I get to choose. Well, I think the reason that I was thinking along this particular route for No Face was because it's a route that was familiar to my mind, which was this idea of like trying to get people to see you by some kind of like transactional relationship. Like, if I do something for you, then in return, I will get adoration. And I try not to do that. And I think that in the past, before I was in therapy, before I was, really dealing with some of the kind of difficult things that have happened in my life, I was very much that way, I think, where I would do things for people and kind of expect adoration in response. And now I think I have a much more healthier view of it. Now I feel like I do things for people because I want to express something to them. And I want them to feel something, and I don't hold on to that expectation that it means that they're going to give something back, but that I try to maintain relationships where there is that reciprocity between two people, and that if there isn't, then maybe it's not a great relationship. I don't know. I feel like I'm just kind of rambling a lot today.
Well, yeah. I mean, I get it. I've definitely done it in my life where maybe in my job, I would work really hard. Maybe I think this way because, or thought this way, because we live in a capitalist society that's like, if you work really hard, then you get money or you get something in return.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like work really hard. But then to my coworker, I would be like, I did all of this. Why don't you like me more?
Yeah.
Love me, like, and then I would be really annoying about it. Like, I would even like text them or something and be like, I did this and I did that. And what are you doing right now? And do you want to go to this bar, or do you blah, blah, blah? Like, it was just this, like, it was so much like No Face, I realize now, because you think that you have gold and you think that that automatically means that they will love you back. But you could have everything in the world. You could do all the work in the world, and that still doesn't mean that they will love you back. Which is also fine, like, mm-hmm. You should love me for me, not because of all the things that I can do, even though that's a good perk.
Yeah.
but it takes time to realize that, and it's almost like subconscious. People don't always realize that's what's happening until they really take time to internalize it and think about it. But I am 27 and much older and wiser. So
yeah.
Just kind of like how No Face became older and wiser in a span of 2-hour movie.
Yeah. It just took someone giving them boundaries.
Right. Yeah, that too.
Right. Yeah. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, look, if don't waste your time just giving to people and expecting love in return. If they don't return your love, like, that's fine, but don't waste your time on them. Go develop a relationship with someone who's going to give you that love back because they like you and they care about you.
Yeah. And sometimes it's also okay just to love someone because they are them, not because they are doing a lot of stuff.
Oh, right.
Like, you don't right. always have to do stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Just this past week, my boyfriend, he cooked for me, which is great, you know? I mean, he cooks for me a lot, so I'm kind of spoiled. But I got upset, just like, not upset, but like annoyed with something where he said something like kind of a comment about me eating a lot. And I was like, you know, you shouldn't say that. And he's like, why are you mad at me? I cooked for you. Ooh. And I had to be like, no, it doesn't matter. Even if you cook for me or not, I should still expect you not to do that. You know, like, it shouldn't always be strictly like, oh, I do this for you, so I get a pass. Or yeah, like, it shouldn't always be transactional, you know?
Yeah, maybe almost never should be transactional. Yeah. But good for right. you for sticking up for yourself. It's like, do things for people because you care about them and you want to show them that you care about them, but don't expect anything in return. They don't owe you anything because you care about them.
Right. So,
deep cuts.
Deep cuts.
And this always happens. I feel like somehow we just like end up delving into like these dark parts of our psyches and personal relationships. This podcast is like therapy for me sometimes.
Same. And actually, sometimes people will ask me, like, when they hear about the podcast, they'll ask, oh, were you a psych major? Are you interested in psychology? And I'll be like, no. But for some reason, there is, you know, elements of psychology. But I don't know. It feels like a mix of psychology, sociology, and philosophy.
Kind yeah, of all into yeah, one. It probably is. And neither of us are educated in any of them.
I would say, okay, I do have a master's in a social science.
That's good. So that's better than me, who has a bachelor's in communication studies.
Hey, I think that's suitable. I think it suits, you know, with a podcast. So
yeah.
Yeah. And I was an East Asian studies major. So I was excited that I got to learn a bit more about Shintoism for this episode.
Yeah. You should have said that up front to establish your credibility.
But part of the plan was that I didn't want to claim that I knew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to say that I took the place of Japanese people who practice Shintoism, you know.
Right.
Or who know about Shintoism.
For sure.
So if you don't have anything else, I do have a very quick little writing ditty thing.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
And so would all the baddies out there listening.
Yes. The baddies. Okay, baddies. Okay. I am like a bush that sits outside Mr. Nakamura's house. I have his daughter's test scores shoved deep into my branches. I have some guy's water bottle beneath me. I have Mr. Nakamura's hand sweat on top of me from that hard day in the sun. I went to the bathhouse. Welcome to the bathhouse, they say. I became cleansed. And when sitting in the bath, I saw a dark figure. They said nothing, but looked at me as if I'm capable of spreading my branches to mountains. An old lady who runs the bathhouse ensured that I will. The end.
Very nice.
That's it.
What a lovely end to a sad episode.
Was it sad?
There were sad elements, mm-hmm. and there were unsad elements. There was both. In everything, there is everything.
Okay. All right, Philosopher Joe. I think it's time to go.
All right.
That rhymed.
Well, you are a poet, so it's in your blood.
Yeah.
This episode was written and produced and other things by us, Joe Anderson and Christiana Hennings.
Tiana Hennings.
And Tiana Hennings.
Be sure to rate us if you liked that episode, or if you didn't, feel free to rate us on Apple Podcasts. Can you rate on Google Play? I actually don't know.
I don't think so. I think it's just okay. Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, please rate us. That helps a lot. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, or all of them at Next Door Villain.
And thanks again for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks.